You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Caroline Hyde and Ed Ludlow.
I'm Caroline Hyde at Bloomberg's World Headquarters in New York.
And I'm Ed Ludlow in San Francisco. This is Bloomberg Technology.
Coming up, Intel, it slides amid some tepid forecasts. We're going to discuss all of that with the CEO, Pat Gelsinger.
Plus, Microsoft and Google post strong results on AI demand for cloud. Full coverage ahead.
And Jeff Bezos and Andy Jassy deleting chats amid an antitrust probe. Now, that's according to the FTC. We bring you their response and the details.
Right now, Caro, we start with semiconductors.
We do. Let's dig in on ill things Intel. Bloomberg's Ian King was on, of course, across the earnings last night, discussing with the business. And look, this seems to be a worry about forecasts. Q1 actually pretty resilient, the forecast tepid.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. All of the divisions performed roughly where Wall Street was expecting, if not a little bit better. The issue that investors had was with the forecast that Pat and his team put out there, and that was considerably lighter than the consensus, and that was explained by Pat and his management team as being related to a structural issue, that some of the excess demand that's out there can't be met because of an issue with a shortage of a certain type of manufacturing.
It's important to talk about the server market. What did we learn about Intel's place in the server market?
Yeah, I mean, as I forwarded along to you, an analyst put it this way: look, the server market, the basic server market that Intel has owned for many years just isn't growing at a rate that it has in the past because spending is going elsewhere. It's going into AI accelerators, and that isn't a big market for Intel yet.
And finally, we should talk about Foundry. Intel is unique in that sense that it is pursuing two business models. What did you learn there?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big story, isn't it? That, Pat is pursuing some long-term fundamental changes to the chip industry. And if it plays out how he projects, we're going to see a whole different Intel and a whole different industry. But in the meantime, he's got to report quarterly earnings based upon what's happening right now.
Bloomberg's Ian King, who leads our semiconductor coverage here at Bloomberg. Thank you very much. And Caro, you know, it's the earnings context, right? They are numbers relative to street expectations. But like every earnings, it's about an outlook and the long term, the story with Intel that I think the market's seizing on right now.
The long term we want to dig into with the CEO. In the short term, though, we have to acknowledge the market reaction. At one point, the worst sell-off that we've seen since 2020, July of 2020. We're now coming off of those lows, Ed, but we're now at the worst since January 2024. But just to add to the fact that this is a company that's lost a third of its market capitalization in this year alone.
We know that AI is a complicated story. Yes, AI accelerators, but the server market needs CPUs. It also needs memory, which we discussed with Micron just the other day. A lot of this is happening in parallel. And as we learned with Microsoft and Google, some of the cloud growth is not necessarily AI related. Data center infrastructure is needed for non-AI reasons as well. So let's try and unpick what's happening in a name that, as you say, is down. We welcome now our Bloomberg TV and radio audiences worldwide, and joining us is the Intel CEO, Pat Gelsinger. Pat, good morning to you and thank you for your time. You know, the stock is down more than 10% and we're kind of here again, right, where there's the short term and the long term where you're trying to convince investors of a return to technology leadership and also grow a foundry business. Have you an updated timeline on when you think you will achieve that target?
Yeah, thanks, Ed. And obviously, hey, we delivered a solid Q1, right? We met on revenue. We beat on earnings, a bit tepid in the first half, as we said. But we see a lot of improvement as we go through the year. And with that, obviously, the foundry business, I would say, we're going to see progress on the foundry business every quarter from now to the end of the decade. You know, it just gets better and better as we move into our new technologies. You know, as we've said, getting back to process leadership, which have better ASPs, and we can build better products with them. We win more external foundry customers as our scale grows. And we're also get past this period where we had to invest to catch up, right, and create the capacity for a decade plus of underinvestment. So everything there becomes a tailwind going forward, and we hit key milestones. And one of those I was very proud of, just this week, we went to production with our first server part on Intel 3. The U.S. is back to leadership process technology being manufactured on our shores for the first time in a decade. So some key milestones, and I'll just say everything is coming together, as we would say, and we're very optimistic that, yes, in fact, we will deliver the foundry business and the manufacturing capabilities as we've laid out for the company, the industry, and the world.
Stiefel, interestingly, analysts over there, 2024 should mark the bottom in many aspects, Pat. But they really want to understand the pace of the climb that is necessary. How can you tell us about how quickly you'll be able to scale back that market share that you've so far lost?
Yeah, and we look at Intel now in these two different perspectives. Intel products, and we expose through our recast financials that we have a very solid fabless business with healthy financials, and we expect those to improve over time. But the big story has been about exposing the foundry financials and the losses associated with those. And what we see is over the decade, that will cross through profitability in the middle of the period for that business as we get back to process leadership and start to moderate the level of investment required to go rebuild that decade of underinvestment. And as we do that, if we would have that today, we'd be more than double the earnings this year that we're forecasting. So it becomes a huge positive lever for us. And as I like to say, all of that's in our control. The wafers, getting back to leadership, the product implications of it, all of these things are our control. And it gets better as we win additional external foundry customers.
The link, I think, Pat, is about growing market share of server to support the costs necessary for the foundry business. You were asked an interesting question on the call in the context of servers built on x86 versus ARM-based alternatives. And you gave a pretty thorough explanation about the place of all of those particular data center CPUs. But what I didn't hear was what's happening out there in the real world. Where are data centers being built and what are they being built on right now?
Yeah, and this is important because we've been in the period now for a number of quarters where data center CPUs have been fairly tepid. And we do see that improving. We had good improvement in the first quarter of the year, and we expect that to continue through the year. And, there's time for a refresh in those data centers. But we're also seeing that the CPUs now as head nodes for AI use cases. We posted some pretty incredible results that we can now run 70 billion parameter models natively on the CPU. I don't need a special accelerator. I can do everything on the software stack that I already use inside of data centers. And we're seeing that these power efficient products that we're bringing to the marketplace, such as our Xeon 6 that we just announced, are going to enable us to stabilize and regain market share. With much higher core counts, the ASPs are going up very nicely on that through the year. So we saw growth in Q1. We expect that to continue through the year. And as we get to the back half of the year, our accelerator product line with Gaudi, Xeon plus Gaudi, we believe becomes a very compelling solution for enterprise customers. And we had quite a number of announcements of those this quarter. Customers such as Bosch and Dell and Supermicro all bringing those into the marketplace, Roche and IBM and key cloud partners like Naver, the fastest growing cloud provider in Asia, all of those coming alongside the Intel strategy. So we see that momentum building, Ed.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Momentum, and we want to just remind us that we are with TV radio audiences, the CEO of Intel, Pat Gelsinger. Pat, on the momentum, everyone wants to talk about AI in all of its ways and means. You've been focusing in on an AI PC, and I'm just really interested in, ultimately, you're going to be shipping in excess of originally 40 million AI PC CPUs. That's the target for 2024. But what's the demand like at the moment, Pat? And what's the cost like?
Yeah, and you know, when we announced the category at the end of last year, Carolyn, it was sort of like everybody said, wow, what's going on? The AI PC, and you're seeing a flurry of interest of other people coming into that market. But Intel, unquestionably the leader, you know, first to declare the market, first to describe the use cases, and our first product, Core Ultra, is having a very robust ramp into the marketplace. And to some degree, I'm racing to catch up to the demand. We're meeting all of our supply commitments, but not all of the upside requests yet, you know, that we're getting from customers. So this is very robust. We expect that we'll exceed the 40 million units this year. We'll be introducing our next generation product in the middle of this year. So all of these pieces, we are very optimistic. And you're seeing use cases and, you know, communications where all of a sudden I get summarization, contextualization, translation in real time, all running on my PC. Developers, gamers, all of these use cases are now becoming AI enabled, and Intel leading the AI PC parade. It's a very exciting time for what I believe will be the biggest cycle of PC refresh and expansion that we've seen in likely decades.
Pat, this is a conversation about your technology and about ultimately your fundamentals of a business. I'm just going to take a turn for a moment, and it's a sensitive question, so I'll give you a moment to think about it. But given your relationship with Israel and the fact that you are one of the largest employers over there, how are you currently feeling about students in the United States protesting against endowments being invested in companies that are associated with Israel at this moment?
Well, we have been in Israel for 40 years now, and it's been an incredible country for us, incredible innovators, and extraordinary resilience by the Israeli people. And they continue, despite the challenges of, you know, the war that's going on there, to deliver against their objectives. So we're very committed to support our teams wherever they are in the world. That said, hey, we seek peace, and we've been clearly emphasizing that we need to find routes of sustainable peace in the region and have been supporting, you know, perspectives that reinforce that across the region. And as we look across the world, we say, boy, you know, there continues to be the turbulence. And fundamentally, our strategy is around building globally resilient supply chains that are balanced across the world. So our core strategy is emphasizing that there will be these challenges across the world, you know, whether that's in Israel, Ukraine, or Asia. And we are committed to making sure that we can support, you know, the global markets that we serve, right, with a strategy that really was built for a turbulent world.
Pat, let's end on AI accelerators. Gaudi is on track for 500 million this year. AMD's MI300X will probably do 3.5 billion, and Nvidia with its generations will do 40 billion. You've said that choice is important and also the CPU is important, and I accept that, many share it. But do you see a clear path where the numbers I just outlined rebalance in your favor in the AI accelerator market going forward?
Given the strength that we saw at our vision event that we had 20 plus customers coming out publicly in support of our accelerator and our Xeon plus accelerator strategy, we're really starting to see that pipeline of activity convert, Ed. And ultimately, much of the activity that you've seen so far on generative AI has been in cloud training. And now, and I think the ultimate monetization of AI happens as business deployments start to occur. And those are the areas that we see strength. We launched the open platform for enterprise AI. How do we enable these use cases inside of the enterprise, but in an open architecture that many get to participate in? We announced the open AI networking, you know, from closed proprietary networking to standard Ethernet-based scale-up and scale-out networking. We announced that this quarter. And obviously, the momentum that we're seeing with Gaudi, you know, all of that half a billion, almost all of it's in the second half of the year. So you can see a very accelerated, you know, cycle. A lot of enthusiasm for Gaudi. You know, the unquestioned leader in TCO, total cost of ownership for enterprises, building on the Xeon franchise and the position that we have in the enterprise, and literally ISVs and cloud providers, but most importantly, enterprise customers seeing that value proposition. Yeah, we feel like we're in a, gaining a lot of momentum now in this category and feel good about the potential for our AI everywhere, AI PC, AI Edge, AI Enterprise, and AI Cloud.
Ending on an optimistic note, we thank you so much, Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger there on all things AI, all things Intel numbers.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Got to get back to those earnings. Got to get back to the new $2 trillion entrant, Google. Microsoft, too, shares absolutely popping higher after the surge in cloud revenue of those businesses, and fueled in part by, guess what? booming use of artificial intelligence services is helping deliver strong earnings results. And we're going to get to it with ClearBridge Investments senior research analyst Hilary Frisch, who, let's just comment on the one that's moving the most today, an Alphabet, parent of Google. Interestingly, cloud, always been seen as a laggard there, but infusing artificial intelligence is helping bring about market share, particularly with startups.
Indeed it is. Thanks for having me, Caroline. Yeah, Google is well known for having a strong presence among startups, tech companies, and they have among the best AI assets around historically. And so they're going to benefit from this along with everybody else. And we've seen 2 quarters of improvement at Google Cloud now.
And I think many were waiting for, okay, you've got these offerings. How are people using them, adopting them, and actually boosting their own productivity? Microsoft shone a light on the fact that, what is it, it's like 65% of the Fortune 100 are using their Azure cloud at the moment. I mean, they must be just ripping away market share from everyone else, even though cloud still good for Google. Microsoft still firing on all the cylinders for you?
Indeed it is. In fact, those cylinders are just really starting to get going. It's interesting because Microsoft is absolutely benefiting from a share perspective due to their leading position in AI across all their businesses, certainly across cloud. And I view AI as ultimately, you know, an ultimate contributor, but it's definitely an accelerant to cloud migrations.
Hilary, good morning. It's Ed in San Francisco. The share reactions of each are interesting. You know, Alphabet more pronounced. When I talked to Ruth Porat on the phone last night about cloud, she basically said AI solutions did make a meaningful contribution to that 28% cloud growth year on year, but she didn't put a number on it. Now, Microsoft and Amy Hood did put a number on it. They said 31% Azure growth, 7% of which came from AI. So really interesting share reaction. I put it to you that Alphabet probably isn't jumping as much on that cloud narrative as it is the sweetener of a dividend.
I think you're right about that, Ed. I think investors were pleased to see the results across the board. I think they breathed a sigh of relief that cloud accelerated, that all businesses accelerated quarter over quarter. But the big piece of new information here was operating margin improvement and commitment to that through the year, as well as the dividend. And that can draw on a whole new class of users. But importantly, it signals a shareholder-friendlier stance than we've seen from Google historically.
Hilary, do you believe now, through the lens of Alphabet and Microsoft's earnings, that corporate America is actually spending on and using generative AI?
I believe they are. I believe most of corporate America is experimenting with AI and testing generative AI in Microsoft's Azure cloud and elsewhere, certainly in Amazon and Google as well. There are some early adopters who are starting to get to some level of scale. Microsoft's 7 points of AI contribution were good. I would say they were generally in line, though, but Microsoft did signal on their call that they were actually capacity constrained, alluding to the idea that that number would have actually been higher were it not for those constraints. I still believe it's going to be starting in the second half where we see that Microsoft inferencing base of users doing inferencing on their Azure cloud really broaden out and start to drive that number.
I want to dig into basically the broadening idea here. We're talking about two names that have already done phenomenally well on the hype around AI. We're waiting for the spillover effects. Now, you've shone a light on certain companies that I keep an eye on because they're New York-based, MongoDB. We also think about what Datadog is up to. Mm-hmm. How are these companies going to benefit from the adoption of generative AI?
So these companies will benefit the whole consumption complex, cloud consumption complex, MongoDB, Snowflake, Datadog, first and third being in New York, they'll benefit with a lag. What they will, so I agree with you, Caroline, that we're not seeing it on a broad-based basis yet. There are select few who are actually going to benefit, but what they will benefit from is the absence of the extreme cost optimization we saw last year. Companies going on a buyer strike in terms of new projects, they're going to see the flow through of what's effectively a cyclical upturn in cloud consumption, and we actually heard that from Microsoft last night, that companies are commencing new projects, that they're starting to do things, they're taking out mothballed projects and bringing those back. So I think that's a positive for this whole group.
Hilary, we're down week one of mega cap tech, and I'm bracing for week two. What do you think is the kind of blanket takeaway of this 7-day period so far?
I'd say overall cautiously optimistic. Again, I stick to the names where expectations are low, valuations are reasonable, And companies have idiosyncratic drivers, Microsoft with AI and share gains, the cloud consumption complex with the absence of negatives. Amazon should show some pretty good results based on the fact that they have a lot of tech companies and startups on their platform too who are experimenting with AI. But it's really company by company, and enterprise budgets overall remain somewhat constrained in first half. I'd expect more of that opening up in second half.
Lou Frisch, always so good to get your expertise on the time that we have earnings, and all the time actually. ClearBridge Investments, we thank her for being here. And what have you got?
Let's get some news in talking tech. And first up, food delivery service Meituan is planning to launch its international platform in Riyadh, its first location outside of China. According to sources involved in discussions, the company's looked into expanding in the Middle East for months and could launch as early as a few months from now. The move comes as Chinese companies seek growth abroad to combat a domestic slowdown. Plus, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Chinese President Xi Jinping met in Beijing. China Xi issued a warning to Blinken against, quote, vicious competition between the two countries, saying, quote, China and the United States should be partners rather than rivals. The two-day meeting composed of dialogue on trade, geopolitical tensions, and even an announcement of AI talks that will begin in the coming weeks. And finally, Huawei's latest smartphones are said to be utilizing an updated version of its Made in China chips. According to an independent analysis, the Pura 70 phones sport a Kirin 9010 processor, which is a new version of the 9000 chips that alarmed Washington officials due to their 7-nanometer tech, long thought to be beyond China's capabilities. According to Jefferies, the Pura 70 smartphone sold out within 2 days of being launched. Caro.
Fascinating. Coming up, look, we're going to talk FTC allegations against the Amazon founder Jeff Bezos and its current CEO Andy Jassy. Apparently, according to the FTC, they've been destroying messages amid an antitrust probe. We'll get you the details and the response from Amazon next. Meanwhile, just look at what's happening with Darktrace today. UK-listed company up 16%. Why? The UK cyber company has actually agreed to sell itself to a private equity firm, Thoma Bravo, for an equity value of $5.3 billion. That's basically a 20% premium. So still a little bit of caution in the market that this deal will get done. Remember, Thoma Bravo actually walked away back in 2022 for talks to buy Darktrace. But really interesting, and this is a company, of course, in somewhat an interesting relationship with the embattled British entrepreneur Mike Lynch, who is on trial for fraud here in the US. We shine a light on Darktrace today. This is Bloomberg Technology.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. Ed Ludlow in San Francisco.
Caroline Hyde back in New York.
Let's get to one of the top stories on the Bloomberg Terminal and .com. Top Amazon executives, including founder Jeff Bezos and CEO Andy Jassy, destroyed text messages discussing business, according to allegations by the FTC, erasing evidence the agency could have used in an antitrust case against the retail giant. I want to bring in Bloomberg's Mike Shepherd, who leads our coverage of the kind of intersection of tech and politics. Amazon is pushing back against this FTC allegation with some force. We will get to that. But we're talking about communications made by executives on the Signal app. Mike, explain it to us.
Well, I think it's important to turn the clock back a couple of months to September. And this is when the FTC filed its initial antitrust case against Amazon. And they've gradually been increasing the pressure on the company in this particular matter, in this lawsuit. In November, they had a less redacted version of the case released to the public, and that indicated that they had concerns executives had been concealing some information, but they didn't name names. Today, we learned last night, and we're discussing today the latest, and that is that they are naming names, including CEO Andy Jassy and the founder, Jeff Bezos. And that indicates the kind of pressure that the agency is putting on the company. And yeah, it echoes what this broader effort against big tech by antitrust enforcers here in D.C.
Mike, turn the clock back even further and you go to 2019 when Jeff Bezos indeed made clear and evident that his phone had been hacked, he felt. And that is the argument as to why executives moved to Signal and these automatic discussions that can delete themselves. And I'm noting that Amazon has currently said, look, the FTC has a complete picture of Amazon's decision-making in this case, including 1.7 million documents from sources like email, internal messaging applications, and laptops, among other sources, over 100 terabytes of data. What more needed they do to prove that they weren't using Signal for, well, conversations they didn't want seen by the FTC?
Well, you know, the FTC is actually alleging that maybe there was more that they needed to know about. Maybe there was more in those conversations that disappeared that they don't have access to and are not privy to in the case yet, and that they should therefore be able to see to be have a clear and complete picture. But Amazon is saying that, look, you already have enough. You have more than enough than you need to be able to carry on your work here. And I'm glad you brought up, Caroline, the point about 2019, because of course that's when Jeff Bezos's texts were purportedly hacked, and his desire to maintain some degree of privacy is another driver here. And so the company is saying, look, we've done enough, and also we had cause to try to protect some of these communications against people on the outside.
Mike Shepherd, you always sum it up so beautifully. Thank you very much indeed, of all things FTC and Amazon today. Meanwhile, let's shift gears a little bit. Elon Musk's artificial intelligence startup, xAI, apparently it's nearing a deal to raise $6 billion in funding, and that would value the company at $18 billion. That's all according to a person familiar with the matter. Bloomberg's Max Chafkin, all in on Elon Inc., joins us now. And I'm interested by the fact of the sheer amount they're raising versus the capitalization of the business. But we did know they were going for funding to beef up xAI.
Well, here's the thing. Elon Musk was able to kind of spin this OpenAI competitor. This is this company, basically, it makes large language models very similar to OpenAI. He did this kind of quickly and with a very small staff. But the thing is, to keep these models training, you need an insane number of very, very expensive GPUs. These are the graphics chips that artificial intelligence companies use. Elon Musk, on a X Spaces interview last month, said that they were using 20,000 already of these NVIDIA H100s. They would need 100,000 of these chips. So this is that's an expense that's in the hundreds of millions of dollars, if not the billions of dollars. So that's why he's raising this money and why they need it.
There is a little backstory of all of this that Lizette Chapman and I of Bloomberg News reported on January 19th that xAI was in talks to raise funds at a valuation between $15 and $20 billion. $18 billion is pretty much between $15 and $20 billion. And Elon Musk denied it. He said false, fake. And then the FT followed up with the same report and he said fake. And then the information came out yesterday with a report which Bloomberg then reported too, and he hasn't said anything yet. The main thing is, irrespective of what Elon Musk says, he's got an ability to raise money for pretty much any project he's doing, Max.
Well, and it's not that he only has an ability, but he has to raise money here because, you know, Elon Musk, as many people know, is, you know, very wealthy, right? But he is not very liquid. Most of his wealth is tied up in Tesla stock, SpaceX stock. He does not have billions of dollars. He spent a lot of money to buy Twitter, turn it into X. He does not have billions of dollars rattling around his pocket without selling some assets, which would, you know, create some disruption within his empire. So he needs this outside money if he has any prayer of sort of catching up to OpenAI. And from the point of view of investors, you can see why they're happy to give it to him, because OpenAI, Anthropic, these companies, you know, there are some real questions about the business models, but they have been able to achieve huge valuations, a lot of adoption. You know, taking a flyer on Elon Musk and the hottest category in business makes a lot of sense if you're these venture capitalists who are considering this deal.
And to his credit, a lot of these projects do tend out to be influential, and it's a lean team at XAI, and it looks like they're making progress. Bloomberg's Max Chafkin, happy Friday to you. A quick news story that we're looking at. Shares of IBM, a little lower, down a percentage point, but they're backing a project in Canada, $730 million, $1 billion Canadian. This is for semiconductors, but in the context of what IBM is involved in, which is packaging and also testing labs. It's an interesting bet. We haven't really talked as much about Canada in the context of, well, are they going to be onshoring, making some kind of domestic effort when it comes to semiconductors like the United States are? Well, IBM's doing something to the tune, $730 million. We will be right back. This is Bloomberg Technology.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice, or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Cybersecurity firm Rubrik, remember, jumped yesterday on its IPO day, and well, it's holding on to its gains. Remember, it raised about $732 million on the back of that IPO. One of the key backers, long-term backers, was Greylock. Very pleased to say that we have Greylock partner Ashim Chanda with us. And Ashim, you were there at the stock exchange, ringing the bell, celebrating. And how does it feel ultimately to see an early bet pay off like that? What was the signals that you got early on to know that Rubrik would go public and do so well?
Yeah, so no, thanks so much for having me. You know, the honest answer is when you back a company very early, you don't really fully know what lies ahead. I'd say this company is really a story of an exceptional leadership team, exceptional leader, targeting a very, very large market. So I think early on in the company's history, it was very clear, like, the size of the markets that they were targeting, you know, are market sizes that most companies don't really go after, and then the quality of the people,
And I think what's interesting more broadly about the direction of travel with Rubrik is that Vandenberg, they popped, they've increased, but also that there are other cybersecurity companies, I'm sure, in your portfolio, yes, eyeing the market. But there's also the juggernaut that is Microsoft. And the same day that they went public, Microsoft came out with its earnings saying, look, we're still making strides in cybersecurity, all interlaced with generative AI. Yes. How much room is there for this sort of element of competition?
Yeah, I would say, you know, cybersecurity is a, you know, is a secular kind of growing market. These markets have, you know, have become very, very large. And today, you know, it's one of the most important parts of information technology. Most large and mid-sized companies spend anywhere from 5 to 10% of their IT budget on cyber. And so there's a lot of room for multiple providers, you know, to provide different pieces of the stack. And then Rubrik is an important partner with, you know, Rubrik and Microsoft have a strong partnership together.
Mm-hmm. Ashim, I'm really, really interested in Rubrik's very close relationship with Microsoft. There's a financial element to it, but given how AI in all of its guises is playing out, I just wondered if you had a particular thesis on how that relationship continues.
Yeah, I would say it's a multifaceted relationship. But fundamentally, you know, what Microsoft and Rubrik are trying to do is really provide customers with cyber resilience. So, you know, and just bring different pieces together.
So what's next at Greylock? I mean, you have a lot going on. You would claim, I think, and many of your colleagues have said on this show that you guys early on generative AI and organized on generative AI. I wondered if you've kind of sharpened your focus on any other areas in particular.
Yeah, I would say, you know, so I've been at Greylock now just a little over two decades. It's never been a more exciting time to be in venture capital, just with everything going on with Gen AI. You know, I'd say the average day in the life of a VC it's really become an AI job. And, you know, we think of it fundamentally at three layers, kind of the foundation layer at the lowest level, enabling infrastructure in the middle, and then applications at the top. And, you know, I'd say in particular for VC-backed startups, there's a lot of opportunity around enabling infrastructure and also in applications. You know, I think it's a safe statement to say that over the coming 5 to 10 years, you're going to see lots of applications completely reinvented, you know, with new workflows, you know, leveraging generative AI.
And you've got companies in the portfolio already doing that, and you can name some of the other key AI companies that you might want to anticipate coming to the market, I'm sure. But what about the companies that aren't inherently AI focused and desperately tried to become so? How do you advise those?
Yeah, I think I think any company that started, let's say, more than 3 or 4 years ago, they're at risk of being completely disrupted by a new startup. So I think if there's a company that's that has a product line that, whether it's a publicly traded company or a newer startup, they have to really go and AI enable. They have to go and look at the application of AI, you know, to their product line. And, you know, and kind of reimagine, you know, other ways. And either, you know, in a co-pilot mode or really, you know, the more important trend, if you take even the 1 year view from here, is it's all about agent frameworks, mm-hmm, and agentic approaches. So most companies, you know, really should be looking at, like, you know, how do these technologies really apply, you know, to the product area.
Ashim, if there's one thing Caroline and I have learned in the last, I say, 12 months or so, it's that not just a company is being founded incredibly quickly, but a platform or products being built very quickly. Yes. You guys have this Edge program where that basically is what you facilitate. An idea from an individual through to a business quickly. Just explain the process and how that's playing out.
Yeah, no, thanks for asking about that, Ed. So yeah, we have a bespoke company building program at Greylock. It's called Edge. We're very selective about, you know, who we pick in the program. And, you know, once an entrepreneur in Greylock, you know, kind of mutually select each other, we basically work very closely with engineers and founding teams all the way from market segmentation to product strategy to insertion, you know, for initial product, working with initial customers, building customer advisory boards, then, you know, over time helping, you know, recruit go-to-market. So it's a very bespoke program. And, you know, many years ago, Palo Alto Networks started in our office through that, through that approach. You know, another one that went public started through that approach is Sumo Logic as well. And, you know, more recently, you know, a company called Abnormal Security started in that process as well. They've rapidly grown to become a late-stage company. And we have another one in stealth mode today sitting in our San Francisco office, you know, in that program.
Ashim Chandler, Greylock Partners. It's great to have you on the program out in New York. We really appreciate it.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
The operator of shared electric bikes and scooters Lime, which is backed by the likes of Uber, is planning to invest more than $55 million this year to expand its fleet globally. Joining us now is the Lime CEO, Wayne Ting. And Wayne, I find this really interesting because it's not just San Francisco. The story of and relationship of micromobility here is well told, but you're looking at other regions around the world. Which region is most receptive right now to adding more to the micromobility offering?
Ed, thank you for having me. We actually see demand from all over the world. Lime is today in 30 countries, 5 continents, 300 plus cities. And the reason why cities are so interested is because the biggest challenge of our time is the challenge of the climate crisis. And the number one source of carbon pollution in Europe and in the United States is from transportation. The vast majority of that is from personal cars and trucks. And if we're going to meet the challenge of climate change, then we must transition away from cars and adopt more right. green transportation alternatives like bikes and scooters, which is why I think you're seeing cities all around the world embrace micromobility as a way to reduce their reliance on cars.
Wayne, I told our audience you were coming on the show, and I put a poll out there to ask, do cities need more electric scooters and bikes? The majority of respondents said no. Yeah, well, almost majority. And in some cases, they voted for fewer. There's still sort of frustration and skepticism and disinterest out there. How do you overcome it?
I think the best way, we need to earn the trust of residents and city governments in order to operate. I think the best way to ensure that is to make sure that our scooters and bikes are parked responsibly, that we have a great safety record, which we do, that we continue to invest in technology, and Lime builds and R&Ds every scooter and bike that we put on the street to ensure that they're the safest, best ride on the out there. And when we continue to deliver an excellent service, we will continue to hopefully build that trust with cities to expand.
Wayne, you're talking to a bike addict here. I actually prefer the non-electric ones than the electric ones here, but I do it a lot here in New York City. I do it when I'm over in London. I use the Uber app to get what you're currently seeing on your screen, the Lime bike. But they're a mess and they're everywhere. And I think that's a key concern here. How do you ensure, do you have to spend more on infrastructure to ensure that people do have places to park them? What is the responsibility of you vis-a-vis the overall government right now?
I think it's a joint effort. So you mentioned London. So London has 2.5 million cars. There are 100 times more cars in London than there are electric e-bikes. And each parking spot can fit 6 to 8 e-bikes. So if you say there's overabundance of something, there's an overabundance of cars in London. There's, you know, if anything, if we can even take a tenth of the parking spots in London and turn it into bike parking corrals, we can easily solve any parking issues we have in London. So we have to continue to work with cities and city governments to make an infrastructure transition, to build more bike lanes and protected bike lanes, and to build more places where you can safely, respectfully park your e-bikes.
You're someone who's building out, expending money, while you're also thinking about profitability. And I know you've been thinking about EBITDA positive for a couple of years now. You probably took a leaf out of the book of Uber, having worked so closely with Dara Khosrowshahi and continuing to work with Uber at Lime now. But I'm interested as to what ultimately the goal is at the moment. Do you have to remain profitable in this current environment? Is that what the VCs are asking?
Yeah, so Caroline, as you point out, 2023 Lime grew by over 30% and hit over $600 million in gross bookings. It's actually our third year of 30%+ growth in a row. More impressively, our profitability 5X to nearly $100 million in adjusted EBITDA. And that is actually what's enabled us to invest $50+ million into scaling e-bikes. And I absolutely think that today's public markets demand sustainable and profitable companies. And Lime is showing that we can do it in a very tough industry as we continue to expand our profitability and profit margins.
You're going public soon?
Well, I think that depends on both the macro markets and our internal business results. What we can focus on is making sure that Lime continues to grow rapidly and continues to expand our profitability. The macro market's still, I would say, a little bit iffy. Like you guys were chatting about Rubrik. Rubrik, great IPO. Reddit had a good IPO, and then you had Instacart last year, but then it's still like one step forward, three steps back. I would say the overall IPO market is probably still a little frosty. So we're doing everything we can to ensure that Lime has the business, the profitability, and the internal controls to be ready to live as a publicly traded company. And whether or not the right time is going to have to depend on the macro markets, which is outside of our control.
Wayne Ting, Lime CEO, eyeing that market. We thank you for telling you the internals of the business. Meanwhile, let's get back to those public markets, Ed.
Yeah, astonishing week in earnings. And then next week, it's another astonishing week in earnings.
Well, we've just had so much focus on AI spend. The fact that they're, what, $40 billion a piece on AI spend? But what can you get from that? Google outperforms, Microsoft outperforms. We'll see what Apple, AMD and Amazon have for us. That's it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology.
Check out the pod. This is BTech.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.